Monday night on the Fan pregame, back from Banff, back in the saddle. It's trade deadline week here on Sportsnet. It's going to be a busy one. Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern is when the buzzer goes, but lots of anticipation all week long from what's going to happen. We've already got some breaking news. That's perfect because we got Merrick Monday in a few minutes, but Lindy Ruff fired from the New Jersey Devils. We're going to go through a lot of headlines from the weekend on the other side with Jeff Merrick.
Yeah, and even since the rough day for Lindy Ruff, we got news from...
That was my joke.
Well, you didn't use it, so
I was going to save it for Jeff, and now it's ruined.
Oh, too bad. Kelly Olynyk signed a two-year, $26 million extension with the Toronto Raptors, so the trade with Utah, not just yielding... You know, a rental asset in a non-rental season. But we'll talk about the Raptors and Scottie Barnes' injury and how it affects the entire organism in just a little bit.
Yeah, Scottie Barnes out with a broken hand. If you missed it, that was Friday night. It's going to be a tough watch for the next little bit without Scottie, but maybe opens the door for some other Raptors to have an opportunity to make an impact this season. But no Scottie for a while will be a bit sad.
And speaking of newsy items, not the most positive news out of Blue Jays spring training. Kevin Gausman and Alec Manoah both... dealing with shoulder issues, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did hit a home run, looks leaner. Cliff Floyd caught up with him, and we'll catch up with Cliff Floyd at 6:30.
And speaking of Blue Jays, former AL MVP Josh Donaldson announced his retirement as well in the last couple hours, so it's been a lot of big headline news. We'll chat about his legacy with the Blue Jays after Cliff, and you can always text in at 590-590 your favorite Josh Donaldson memories. Do you think he should be on the level of excellence? We'll get a little bit of time to talk Josh Donaldson later in the show.
Finally, it's fight week. UFC 299 this weekend. We'll tee that up all of this week. Broncos release Russell Wilson. These are news items we won't even be able to get to, and we'll have best bets at the end of the show. Busy one today.
Yes, a busy one today, a busy week, and an important week for the Maple Leafs. They're on tonight, 7 p.m. versus the Bruins. That's Monday Night Hockey. We'll be leading into that, of course. The Leafs, they've won 9 of the last 10, overcome a lot of adversity. I feel like they've really tried to prove something throughout these games, and tonight's obviously another huge opportunity to do so against the rival Bruins, who they're only 6 points back with 2 games in hand. So, like, really within striking distance, they can continue to put a stamp on what's been a really great stretch of hockey for the Maple Leafs. That's up after us on Monday Night Hockey.
Yeah, timing is everything. This run of play has definitely been the most encouraging for the Maple Leafs the entire season. And, of course, we are a couple days away from the trade deadline. We got the Labushkin move in the can for the Leafs. 75% retention makes you feel like, hey, there's something else coming. Just what should that other thing be? I guess there's 3 more games before the deadline for the Leafs to have everything crystallize in view for Brad Treliving.
All right, we'll get to that and more, but let's bring in Jeff Merrick, of course, of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. I'm going to use it in case you weren't listening, Jeff, but it was a rough day for Lindy Ruff. Oh, okay, damn it, you heard it. Well, no, just pretend you didn't.
Dog days for Ruff. Here we go. Chateau Bow Wow. Let's go. Let's get them all.
I love that one.
It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing Milk-Bone underwear, the old Norm line from Cheers. Yeah, you can have that. Keep going with the dog stuff. Here we go. Wendell Bark, all of it. Here we go.
Okay.
Let's get all the dog stuff out. How's it going? Welcome back from Banff, by the way.
Thank you. Nice and warm in the city compared to where I was. So Lindy Ruff fired just a few minutes before we came on the air. Contract extension in October. Jack Adams nominee last year. The fans are firing. Are saying fire Lindy, and now we've got to this point. Not a great save percentage throughout his tenure with the New Jersey Devils, but this felt like it was a long time coming.
It did, and what's the one common denominator amongst fired coaches? And this I'm painting with a wide brush here, but what is the one thing that What is the one thing that when you're there's an old saying, show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach. Alain Vigneault's great line, hockey is easy. If your goaltender is better than my goaltender, you win. If my goaltender is better than your goaltender, I win. So, look, the goaltending hasn't exactly been great in New Jersey for a while now. I tend to think that that's only part of the problem, that the blue line in front of them is at least equal an issue as the goaltending. But nonetheless, like, this isn't the first time and won't be the last time that a team gets, you know, subpar goaltending and the coach is the one that walks the plank for it. Now, with the New Jersey Devils, I mean, you look at last season, they pretty much kicked off the season with fire Lindy. And then they went on that, was it, 13-game winning streak, and it was sorry, Lindy. And then everyone loved him again. And now this season happened, and they're back to hating Lindy Ruff. It seemed as if this was going to, you know, march to some type of inevitability here. And you're right, he did sign the contract extension 1 year, and there's a club option on another year, I believe, as well. So Travis Green takes over in an interim capacity, but I think that the work for the New Jersey Devils, and by the way, they had an absolutely horrible weekend, dropping one to the Anaheim Ducks, as we saw. Jack Hughes with a shootout with 2 seconds, or penalty shot with 2 seconds left, and then just getting smothered by the Los Angeles Kings on Sunday night. It was a real tough one for the New Jersey Devils. There's a lot of work still to be done here, and I still maintain, and I'm going to put my hand up here too. I'm part of this problem, okay? And that is the underreporting of the Dougie Hamilton injury and what that's done to the New Jersey Devils. To me, it's the most underreported story of the year. Anytime you lose a number one defenseman, I know Maple Leafs fans are saying, hey, we lost our top dog for 5 games. We went 5-0. When you lose your top dog for an extended period of time on the back end, it is really hard to recover. See John Carlson last year with the Capitals and see Dougie Hamilton this year with the New Jersey Devils. It's a tough slog, and Tom Fitzgerald has his work cut out for him now.
So can't argue with any of that. 890s, 890, losing Dougie Hamilton is losing a number one defenseman, as you mentioned. But a couple things just looking at the team this year stuck out to me. Andre Palat, 24 points in 51 games. Timo Meier, 28 points in 48 games. Dawson Mercer not having a step forward year. Alexander Holtz kind of laboring with 24 points on the year. There are some guys here who are underperforming a little bit. I think Timo Meier may be chief among them. What has made them less explosive this year compared to last? Because, yeah, the goaltending hasn't given them a chance, and Dougie Hamilton's Dougie Hamilton. But this team hasn't scored the way it did at least last year.
You remember when the Edmonton Oilers had all those young kids up front and we said, what's the problem with Edmonton? And then someone finally realized, oh, yeah, they don't have the blue line to get them the puck. I wonder if that's part of the problem here. Now, I'm not trying to excuse Timo Meier, and you're bang on. Like, this is a problem. He's being paid a healthy amount of money to produce, and it hasn't been there for Timo Meier. Ditto for Andre Palat. Dawson Mercer got out to just like a horrible start to the season. What did he go like the first 25 games? He didn't have a goal. Like it was like Dawson Mercer watch. Like, where is he? He's going to appear on milk cartons. When are you going to finally score a goal? And then he started to turn it around. Now he's been someone that teams have been asking about. So, hey, if you're not too happy with Dawson Mercer, we'd love to take the sometimes center, sometimes winger off your hands. But I think New Jersey understands just how good of a player they have there. I'm glad you mentioned Alexander Holtz, Justin, because the one player here that I think that might benefit from a coaching change, because it seemed at every turn Alexander Holtz was in Lindy Ruff's doghouse. It's probably Alexander Holtz here. If there's one player that I could pinpoint, if you said, hey, Merrick, who do you think does this firing help most, or maybe give another opportunity to, I think it is probably Alexander Holtz. But you're right. There's players underperforming, and I always look at the blue line when there's a lack of production up front. And I just cite those Oilers. Like, if you don't have a blue line that's mobile and can move the puck up to the forwards, it's pretty hard to put up points.
Our producer Mike Gentile points out there's a Leaf connection here. Travis Green hired by Tom Fitzgerald. They played together with the Leafs about 20 years ago. Yep. Now, did this start then?
Yep. What, this hire?
I guess the connection.
Or this association.
The trust, the association, sure.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, you know how this game works, right? And I understand. Like, this is true of every industry. This isn't unique to sports. I know we like to point it out and say, like, okay, we're playing snakes and ladders, and this guy is related to that guy, and they played here, and, you know, that's his nephew or that's his niece, and that's why he's on the team, and that's why this guy got hired. I mean, you go with people that you trust, and you go with people that you know, and I know it makes it, you know, hard to break into the industry, but that's the story of any industry, really. So I've kind of turned around, you know, my thought on, you know, the quote unquote nepotism hires. Oh, going back to that well again. It's like, this is serious business, and there's, you know, millions of dollars on the line. These are $1 billion teams, and one bad move by anybody here can cost a lot of jobs. So you tend to go with the people that you know the best and the ones that you think are capable and the ones that you can trust. And obviously, there's a strong trust factor here between Fitzgerald and Travis Green.
We're chatting with Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. So this weekend, Canucks signed Elias Pettersson to that 8-year, $92.8 million extension. It is trade season, but it was signing season for them. So this wasn't always a guarantee, right? It was kind of an up-and-down process. I know you had Bruce Boudreau on today on the Jeff Merrick Show. You chatted a little bit about the player himself and maybe what we've learned through the relationship over this process. What do you have to share about maybe like the behind the scenes on how this contract did get signed? And maybe did we just not know the player well enough while we were learning about this negotiation? Yeah.
Well, I mean, the one thing that Boudreaux said today was, you know, he's, and this should come as no surprise. I mean, we really don't know much about Elias Pettersson at all. He's a pretty shy person. He keeps a lot of things to himself, which is why I think a lot of people were surprised that on that now infamous boat ride in Stockholm with Elliot Friedman, he shared as much as he did about how he feels about his relationship with the Vancouver Canucks and his position on the team and whether or not he'd like to extend. You know, Boudreaux talked to me a little bit about, you know, conversations that they would have where Pettersson would come to him and say, like, you know, this kid's struggling, put me with him. You know, or, you know, we're playing a preseason game against the Edmonton Oilers. Put me up against Connor McDavid. Like, he said that he's the one guy that is always trying to make everybody better around him. I think through this process, we kind of learned how power moves work in the NHL, didn't we? Like, you could make the argument that, you know, Elias Pettersson, by dragging this out and kind of making Vancouver play, come here, go away, come here, go away. I mean, that's a power move. That puts all the power in your hands. And I think if you're Patrick Galvin, if you're Jim Rutherford, if you're the owner of the Vancouver Canucks, I think you're probably scared of him, you know, taking the qualifying offer and then just piecing out on the team. I mean, this is, you know, could be Matthew Tkachuk 2.0, and I think that terrifies every team and certainly would have with the Vancouver Canucks, and that's why they sprung into action. And yes, there were conversations with the Carolina Hurricanes. Yes, there was an offer. Did they use that as leverage to get Pettersson to show his hands, get back to the table, start to put together a deal? Yeah. To me, this was kind of a classic clash of power moves, wasn't it? This is very, might be like a passive aggressive flex by Pettersson by saying, like, yeah, I'm not ready to sign yet. Nah, I'm not going to sign yet. I mean, just piling up the points, building up the resume, building up the building up the bank here. And then, you know, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Galvin saying, all right, we'll trade you somewhere you probably don't want to go if you don't come to the table. Like, this is pretty powerful stuff last week. Like, we saw two flexes here. We saw one from the player and one from the team. It was a pretty interesting week in Vancouver.
Yeah, one long and drawn out from Pettersson and the other maybe pretty quick in the Canucks. Yes. And the one that worked was, I guess, the one that was sudden and abrupt. I think the Canucks did a wonderful job, honestly, getting this deal done for the number that they did. Let's go to the
Could have
Leaf.
Been more expensive. Could have been more expensive.
100% could have.
Like, he didn't. Like, there's still some, like, when Quinn Hughes is up in a few years, like, there's still going to be, you know, money there. It's not as if he said, you know, Pac-Man, I'm taking them all. Like, forget it. Like, he left some money here.
And let us reference that boat ride until the end of time, because it's great. Let's go to the Leafs. Labushkin in the can for Brad for Living. Best guess at what comes this week for the Maple Leafs?
I think it's going to be another defenseman. And probably a defenseman with term. I think all of us have sort of circled around the Washington Capitals and right shot defenseman Nick Jensen, who's got a couple of more years at just slightly over $4 million as maybe a target here for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, I mean, you guys heard, you know, the Washington Capitals, Brian McClellan, general manager, on the weekend essentially throw in the towel and said the accent is on the youth now. The accent is on the future. And so we're all looking up and down the lineup. It's like, okay, who's staying and who's going? And I think for the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, probably the, I mean, you can make a case about Joel Edmondson too, I suppose, too. But I think maybe the most desirable the most desirable defenseman there is probably Nick Jensen. So if I'm going to throw a dart at the dartboard, that's where mine's probably going to land. I think one more defenseman. Ideally, I think they'd like to do one winger and one defenseman. But I think, you know, Brad Treliving, you know, his hand in a lot of ways has kind of been forced here by a couple of things. The winning streak, the, you know, big performances against big teams, and we'll see how they do with these two games against the Boston Bruins this week. Big win against the New York Rangers and a really exciting game on Hockey Night on Saturday. And Austin Matthews trending towards 75 goals. And I think if you're the general manager, as much as you might have, kind of like we think Tampa's doing, looked at the season and said, okay, you know what? It's not the year for us. Let's keep the powder dry. Let's not burn resources right now. You look around at what's happening, and it kind of feels like it's the players that are forcing the general manager's hand by saying, look, we're a competitive team. We're a good team. We know we're a couple of pieces away. Look what Matthews is doing. Look at the win streak. Look what we can do even without Morgan Riley in the lineup. You owe us a trade or two. You owe us some new pieces because we've given you everything that you would want as a new general manager and probably more.
I think the most interesting team this week, and I'm sure you probably have them up there as well, is Pittsburgh Penguins. Obviously, this last weekend felt like maybe a knife kind of into their season. And an interesting point that I think we're all circling is Kyle Dubas might have one of the first opportunities to tear down or to strip down a team. Hasn't really done that before, right? So what direction do you think the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to go, and how soon do they actually start that process?
I think that knowing Kyle Dubas as long as I have, he's always had this in the back of his mind. Like, the thing about Kyle Dubas is he is a planner. Dubas plans for sort of every contingency. Okay, if we're here in February, what do I do? If we're there in February, what do I do? What do I do if we're here in January? What do I do if we're here in March? Like, the thing about Dubas is he's very thorough. He does nothing frivolously. If anything, he's been, you know, he's been criticized for waiting too long on some decisions. We've seen him cite, you know, one of his mentors, Lou Lamoriello, when you have the time, take it. Don't rush into anything. I think that, you know, Dubas has been, you know, planning for both the Pittsburgh Penguins to be vying for a playoff spot and also bowing out of one. And I think he acts accordingly. And I think that game on Saturday, not that you want to pin it all on one game, you know, might have been the final nail here. And the way they lost to was really tough. But, you know, to your point, Ailish, you're right. This will be the first time that Kyle Dubas has had to tear something down at the professional level. He joined Toronto coming in from the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, and it was build. It was get to the playoffs. It was through the draft and player development and trades, and he becomes general manager, and John Tavares falls in his lap, and it's build, and it's contracts, and it's we can and we will, and build and grow and grow. And then he got the Pittsburgh job, and it was I'm adding Erik Karlsson, and we're running this thing back, and we're getting into the playoffs. And now for the first time in his career, he's got to remove bricks. It'll be really curious to see how he does this. We know with Jake Guentzel, he's not so much interested in draft picks as much as he is with young players, young prospects. We'll see what he can come up with here. There's a lot of desire around the NHL, obviously, for someone like Jake Guentzel. I think this is going to be a fascinating, and if you're just into like watching how general managers operate, this is going to be a fascinating study, because this is the first time Kyle Dubas has ever had to do this at the NHL level.
Two other potential sellers and fascinating teams are on Sportsnet 1 tonight. Seattle at Calgary, fresh off the Mikra Kiprasov retirement ceremony. The Kraken have piqued my interest here. Wenberg being held out. I got a lot of good defensemen who could help playoff teams on that roster. Do you expect the Kraken to be aggressive? And has anything really changed on the Flames front?
That's interesting. I don't necessarily associate aggressive with Ron Francis. He's a very patient general manager. He's a very deliberate general manager. He's a very thoughtful general manager. But, you know, this does require a little bit of a step back here. So I do wonder about, you know, someone like Will Borgen on the back end. I think even if they were, you know, marching towards the playoffs, I mean, they might have used Will Borgen to help, you know, fill some holes as well. Wenberg is another story. I still think at the end of it, they're going to try to find a way here to keep Jordan Eberle. They like him. They want him. They think he's good for the younger players. He wants to stay. Family roots are already deep in Seattle for Jordan Eberle. I think that, you know, as much as some teams might want someone like Adam Larson, I don't know that they're going to let him go. I mean, Vince Dunn is completely hands off. Adam Larson still has one more year on term.
Alexiak?
He would be someone that could fetch a lot. You know, Alexiak's an interesting one because, you know, that's a really interesting name that you bring up, because the one thing around trade deadline amongst defensemen, one manager told me this a few weeks ago, and it's a really good point. Around deadline time, as much as we talk about Sean Walker, you know, puck mover, good feet, like all of that.
Keswick boy.
Around deadline time, well, I know, there you go. Brooks there is Express, Keswick baby. Guy, Georgina Blaze, let's go. YSE forever, I know. Tierney and Ambrose, I know. The Troika, I know. So the thing about Alexiak is he's big dude, and that's what managers want at trade deadline in their defensemen. Like, they want cavemen. Like, they want big cavemen. That's what they look for around. That's why Nick Seeler is a big commodity right now. And I think that if someone could offer the right price for Ron Francis, maybe he has a second thought about it. But I think you've really nailed something here, and that is, you know, big defensemen tend to go at trade deadline. So if there's a shocker That might be it, because every year at deadline, there's one trade that we just did not see coming. And bam, where did that one come from? I mean, not that it would be a major deal, but maybe for Oleksiak. We'll see how deep Ron Francis wants to make this. I mean, you can tell with Wennberg, I mean, if he's moving out, I mean, eventually that is going to become, like, that second line center spot, like, that's Shane Wright's, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, when Shane Wright is ready for the NHL, full-time service, that's his. Matty Beniers is the number one center. Shane Wright slides in as number two. I think this is a sort of beginning of that right now. Like, if anyone's enjoying the fact that, you know, Wennberg is leaving the Seattle Kraken, it's probably Shane Wright playing for Coachella Valley.
All right, Jeff, lots to go through today. We appreciate your time. Enjoy this week. It might be a busy one. And hopefully by Friday at 3 p.m., we all have lots to talk about.
My great memory of Banff was staying at the Banff Springs Hotel in the summer of 1991 with my then-girlfriend, and we hitchhiked from Banff Springs Hotel to Calgary to go see a Bob Dylan concert.
Wow.
And as we were sticking our thumbs out, and I highly recommend not hitchhiking, but I got to tell you the true story, we got picked up by a limousine. It was the best hitchhiking experience I ever had in my life.
Wow. Was it Bob Dylan?
That's my Banff Springs story.
Dylan?
It was someone that had just dropped off a Japanese family to Banff Springs Hotel, because at the time at that hotel, they were filming a very popular Japanese soap opera. I don't know if they still do. I doubt it. This is the early 90s, but it was flooded with Japanese tourists who love the soap opera. And he's just driving back to Calgary, back to the airport, and he wanted some company. And he picked up me and my then girlfriend, Jane. And we had a nice little limo ride back to Calgary.
Just you like a rolling stone down the hill to go see Bob Dylan. There's my reference of the day. All right, Jeff, appreciate your time. We'll chat with you next week. Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show, 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Lots to go through. If you missed the top of the show, Lindy Ruff fired from the New Jersey Devils. Our guy, Travis Green.
I'm not claiming.
Yeah, okay. Well, you tried to make a reference to a plan in action years and years ago for him.
Connection.
Maybe there's something there. I like it.
Well, I guess kind of I wanted him to tell us about, why Fitzgerald and Green would be on the same page, but maybe there's not as much there as I thought there would be.
Earlier as well, a little bit of Raptors related breaking news was Kelly Olynyk, 2 years, $26 million with the Raptors for an extension here. We just touched on it briefly, but Scottie Barnes going to be out with a fracture in his left hand. Surgery's not ruled out, but likely, if you look at the remaining amount of time with the Raptors season, probably going to be out of the lineup, which is disappointing because obviously for Scottie Barnes as a player in this season, I think a lot of our excitement to watch the Raptors moving forward was, what's Scottie going to do? How's this team going to look around Scottie? How is he going to take the ball and be a leader and and grow into a veteran? And he's not going to get that opportunity, which is really hard because I think the Raptors were probably going to rely a lot on that for informative reasons for who they can build this team around with Scottie. And, it's not like they're not going to understand the process, but IQ and Quickly and RJ playing around Scottie was a really big point of interest. So I think it'll be a little bit difficult to kind of see this direction and see how this team fits when you don't have the guy, Scottie Barnes.
Yeah, it's not as though you're entering next season blind, but you don't have the clear vision that you thought you'd have, because you were going to have 30 games to see Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, and Scottie Barnes all together, how those pieces mix and mingle, what you can do in the summer to supplement it, and then you can start fresh with zero wins and zero losses with those three guys plus, and feel good about your start. But now you don't get that ramp-up process, so it will affect this season, but I think it'll affect next season more than it will this season. I will say, though, good for Kelly Olynyk for starting on the right foot.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the Kelly Olynyk thing was, hey, he can help Scottie Barnes in some bench units. They would pair well together, and I guess they saw enough out of Kelly Olynyk to want to give him the 2 years to continue to play with this team, despite the uncertainty now about, hey, let's just see it before we dive into anything. But clearly they were comfortable enough to do this after Scottie Barnes' injury.
Raptors back in action tomorrow night against the Pelicans. Up next after us on Sportsnet will be Monday Night Hockey. You got Boston and Toronto, a big match between two heavyweight teams of continuing the Maple Leafs on their little prove-it streak here as we get closer to the trade deadline on Friday at 3 p.m. We will take a quick break, though, and we'll talk some baseball with Cliff Floyd, a World Series champ, former Blue Jay as well, and a guy that's going to give us a little insight, who talked to Vladdy up close and personal about a week ago. So Cliff Floyd on the other side of the break.
The best Blue Jay show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame Sportsnet at Sportsnet 590. The Fan spring training is underway in Dunedin. The Blue Jays getting some good headlines and some, you know, headlines that make you pause because it is only spring. The only thing that I listen to Blair Barker every day, of course, and it's like the only bad things can happen in spring training, like injuries, right? And we're starting to see a couple things that give you pause, like Kevin Gausman today dealing with some general shoulder fatigue following a bullpen that he threw on the weekend. He's going to be reevaluated. No structural concerns, but yet, you know, Kevin Gausman is the ace of this team, a guy that we really need to see the same or even more, if possible, from. You know, even a level would be great. And then Alek Manoah, of course, dealing with some of his own stuff. It's early, but these things give you a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah, especially the Gausman one. I mean, indispensable would be the word that I would use to describe Kevin Gausman and his import to this team. Like, it just can't go wrong for him. If you're expecting this team to continue to be built on, well, what it was built on last year, which is a starting rotation that is dominant and dependable. Without Kevin Gausman, it isn't that anymore, even with Bowden Francis being one of the real positives to start spring training, him touching 97, getting a lot of buzz, and that might fill the Manoah hole, but nothing can step in for Kevin Gausman.
No.
Unless Blake Snell wants to come.
An interesting thought, still out there. We'll see. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. As well did get his first home run today, 438 feet. I know I mentioned our next guest, Cliff Floyd. He did play with Vladdy's father at times. It was an expo, so not a Blue Jay, but an expo. He did get a chance to chat with Vlad down in Dunedin, of course, an MLB Network analyst as well. He's joining us now, Cliff Floyd. Cliff, thanks so much for jumping on. How's it going?
Good, all is well. Just wrapped up today in Lakeland and just got back home, so productive and cool.
Yeah, I'm sure this time of year brings back, you know, some really exciting memories for yourself. The grind begins. Everybody's in the best shape of their life, and I know we saw a video of you talking to Vladdy, and you said it, like, you started your conversation with him saying that he looked great and that he was working really hard in the offseason. So what did you learn from Vlad in your discussion about what he did this offseason to show up to camp feeling and looking great?
Well, he kept it very simple. I mean, his theory was just to try to be in the best shape possible. I was a little shocked that he didn't, you know, he wasn't utilizing that new, brand new, beautiful, you know, spring training facility they have. But I think he kind of understands where he's at and what he wants to do. And he knows that he's the key to this team winning. And if they're going to go to the postseason, go deep into the postseason, you know, it's the best version of him. I don't think you have to overwhelm himself and put himself in that position where he thinks he has to be a superstar, but you kind of sense that he just really wants to win, and it's not about, you know, it's a we thing, and that's the sense I got leaving camp.
So better conditioned, stayed pretty much local during the offseason, wanted to be at least near the facility or near those who could help him with his offseason. And hopefully that will portend good things for this year. But what did you see as the issue last year for him?
Well, I think it was pretty, you know, like blatant that he just couldn't catch up to the fastball consistently. And I think sometimes we get caught up in saying, well, you have to be more consistent than this. You have to be more consistent. That word gets thrown around loosely in our sport, and I don't understand why. I mean, it's a tough game. Obviously, he's getting the best pitching every single night. He just wasn't on time enough. And talking to the hitting coach, Guillermo, I think the biggest thing they have to do is figure out where his hands are going to be and keep that consistent. And I think everything else will sort of, you know, fall into place. I mean, you know, the game is about adjustments. Always talk about the adjustments to the adjustments. And, you know, when pitchers, you know, find – that one area that they can beat you with, they just consistently stay there. So if he can get his hand slotted a little bit different, I wish I could sort of give you an idea of what I'm talking about, but his hands, in my opinion, was a little too high. Mm. And I think they're trying to work himself, you know, his hands a little lower so he don't have to, you know, go so far back. He can sort of just, you know, play pepper with the baseball. I think that'll be enough for him.
I wonder, so Don Mattingly's taken over the role of offensive coordinator for this team, and I know that's kind of a new term. It's not the NFL, but something in a sense of really being the guy that tells the performers what to do in terms of, like, getting up to the plate and hitting. So how hard are those tweaks? Obviously, you've been through it yourself. When you say moving your hand placement and making these small adjustments, like, to me, it sounds super simple, but if you've been playing baseball for your whole life, that might not be an easy off-season fix. Like, so maybe Don Mattingly's role as somebody that's such a professional himself really just, like, hones in on what Vladdy can do. How much do you think that relationship is going to help him?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's going to help him a lot, but I also think the conversation with Donnie is just more of just the mindset. See, the mindset for me in hitting and all of it, you have to change the mindset. You have to have, you know, the manufacturing mindset. You have to have, you know, things that are going to put you in position to not count on the three-run homer all the time. Yes, yeah, sexy. Yes, yeah, great. I get it. You know, it's something that's been around, and I love hitting three-run homers too. But if I can't play the game the right way, then how are you going to manufacture when you have a power outage? I think this team has to understand that. I think that's the message Donnie's going to give them. Is, you know, sometimes coaches want to stay out of the way, but I like the coaches to get in the way. You know, get in the way of how the mind works and make sure you understand what you're getting consistently every single night. Is, you know, is Bo getting on base and going first to third? Can we get a ground ball to second and score a run? Those are little things that are going to help you win ball games, especially in this tough AL East. So I love what Donnie's preaching. I had a chance to talk to him the other day as well. But I think the biggest thing with Vlad is, to your point, to your question, is it's never an easy fix. I think it's just some of getting on that plane where – that even playing and keeping your hands in a position where once you get to two or three fastballs and you feel good about it, then it clicks consistently, and then you don't look back.
Chatting with Cliff Floyd, World Series champion in 1997 with the Marlins. The big offseason acquisition for the Blue Jays this year was Justin Turner. You played in 17 big league seasons. Justin Turner, not quite there yet, but this is a 39-year-old. What is the key to doing it for a long time when you're approaching 40, doing it into the latter portion of your career? How is it harder, and how has a guy like Justin Turner thrived at an advanced age?
Well, I think the hard part is just the body, right? Keeping the body in tip-top shape and giving yourself a chance to, help a ball club, or giving yourself a chance to stay out there and not be looked at as a player coach, but as a player. Once the body cooperates, then you can get the work in that you need. And health plays a huge part in being able to, you know, to get the most out of a body like Justin Turner, what he's bringing to the table. So I think last year in Boston helped him mentally as far as just what he can, you know, what he can do. Obviously, the dimensions, you know, and Toronto are totally different than the ones in Boston. But as far as just being able to know you can still do it, being able to know you can get to that fastball inside, helps you out tremendously. And he's going to bring another different dynamic to this club. I mean, you need some veteran leadership. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Bo, and Bo said, look, I haven't had many conversations with him, but the ones we have had has been about the team and what we need to do from a team standpoint. And when you get to this point, you don't want to lose that one of opportunity to win like this club has. This youth has now become, you know, young veterans. They're not young anymore. So I think you having a guy like, you know, Justin Turner to come in sort of alleviates the you know, some of the things that Snyder has to do consistently every night to get these boys ready to play.
I love that you said this team isn't young anymore, because that's kind of the words exactly that Bo Bichette said this offseason coming into spring training, that they're not a young team anymore. Like, they got to find that level, because they can't use that as an excuse anymore. And he did call out Justin Turner as somebody he wanted to have on this Blue Jays team. And I think he fits pretty seamlessly with that veteran experience, with that professionalism that the Blue Jays want to mesh with some of their young leaders as well. So let's talk about Bo Bichette, because he is a dynamic player. He's one of the faces, if not the face, of the Blue Jays. What do you love most about watching Bo Bichette, how he carries himself, how he plays baseball, and how he's growing into hopefully a young superstar that the Blue Jays have for a long time?
So I think one is he has a quiet confidence about him, you know, maybe coming from, you know, a baseball family where dad played and so on and so forth has helped him out in a lot of areas that, you know, not a lot of guys get the luxury of having. But, you know, when you understand what you really want and you actually, you know, want to be a leader, that speaks volumes because you don't get to get days off as a leader. You can have days off. You're going to have 0 for 4s. I get it. But this is how you have the 0 for 4s. Can you still bring defense to the table? Can you still back and score a run? Being able to talk to your boys and have that conversation, that hard one at times, is another, a key component of being a leader. So it's never easy, and it's never easy to step in front of your squad and talk about, leadership and what they have to do as a team. But when you take on that responsibility, it just speaks to what you're trying to do and what you're trying to achieve.
Reticent to make too big of a deal about this, Cliff, but Kevin Gausman dealing with some general shoulder fatigue kind of shut down a little bit. Definitely this ailment, whatever it is going to affect his spring training. And again, don't want to make too much of this, but if a really, really important player goes down in spring training or has some sort of adversity thrown his way, how does it affect the entire ecosystem at a spring training?
Man, it's always tough. I mean, I ask every manager this, this camp is the importance of getting guys to the finish line of spring training. Some divisions like the AL Central, you need what, 85 wins possibly? I mean, I'm not talking about the division. I'm just throwing you my opinion. Like 85 wins to win that one. And the AL East, you need 100.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You need 100. So you can ill afford to lose anybody big. And if you do, you better have depth. There's a couple guys still out there. I don't know how that plays into what you're trying to do. But there's a couple guys out there free agent-wise. I don't know what it's going to take to get those guys into a team. But when you start hearing shoulder, you still got a couple weeks left. Like I said, you're not going to blow it up. I mean, nobody talked about it the other day when I was in camp. Mm-hmm. But you can't lose big guys. You just can't. I've been on teams. I mean, maybe you can make up for it if you get a star that comes up from the minors and does something special, or you got a guy that takes advantage of opportunity if you do have an injury and you shut the guy down for 2 weeks. But if you lose a big guy early, the morale of the team going into the season, I mean, it's a little shaky, especially, like I said, especially in the AL East. And I had a chance to talk to the Yankees and the O's. And this is a year I felt like if you're going to have three teams coming from a division, it could be that one.
Talking about losing a big player early on in the season, I mean, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of expectation for Alek Manoah, who is a guy that's not only a big player in terms of performance, but a big player in terms of personality and clubhouse vibes. And he's been obviously really struggling since the middle of last season. And there's a lot of anticipation in his first outing. He hits three batters. He gets an inning in a bit there. But, not a big cause for concern is how they're wording it. But for you, have you ever seen a player, a young player specifically, kind of struggle with a bounce back or struggle with getting to form after a really great season? He was a Cy Young candidate. He falls off, and like the mental pressures and the physical pressures of getting back. Have you ever witnessed something like that in your career? And just how difficult might it be for Alek Manoah to find that level ground again?
Oh man, that type of situation. I'll tell you this: he won't be the first. He ain't definitely won't be the last. You know what I mean? And it's just that the game is just that hard. And have I ever seen one? I mean, I must have in 17 years seen somebody and thought, what the heck happened? You know what I mean? And I've probably been there numerous times going, I can't hit the side of a barn right now. And I don't know if it's ever going to come back. It always plays in your mind as a player. When you play a sport that you fail to be good at, it's tough to get out of your own way at times. He's been humbled. I don't know what that means as far as being humble right now, because they need Alek Manoah, mm-hmm. right? And talking to Snide, he basically just put it out there like, look, we're going to let him fight through it. But I'm saying to myself, how long do you let that happen? You can't tax your bullpen every night. I do wish Alek the best. I really do. It's always tough to see a young dude go through it. He looked in great spirits. How far that goes, I guess it goes as far as you getting your stuff back and being a dominant pitcher. But to let him fight through it, I think is the first step to getting the mental side of it back right.
Cliff, what does it say about baseball that Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery remain without a team?
It speaks to now you want to ask me, have I ever seen anything like this? Now that's something I'm just shaking my head. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I really can't. I, the importance of what we're trying to do every single year, and I say we because I'm still feel like I'm you know, I'm in the game. I love the game. I love what the last out means to our sport. And if you want a championship, I don't know how you have two guys that are as good as they are still sitting at the crib chilling. It just it doesn't speak to, you know, me as a player looking out there going, how the heck they ain't in my clubhouse. I mean, if you say we trying to win, then they should be in somebody's clubhouse.
Yeah, it's a very weird situation to follow. I mean, Chapman was one that was close to home with the Blue Jays. He's moved on somewhere else, but still some big names out there. Speaking of at the crib chilling, Josh Donaldson retired as yeah. someone that obviously we knew and we loved.
Can
in
Josh
this
Donaldson
city.
Chill?
I don't think so. Actually, I don't know.
I mean, if he loves golf, so if you call that chilling, that's chilling. It's about as chill as you can be, right?
Depends who you're talking about golf with, me or Justin. Some of us have more chill than the other. But Josh Donaldson retires today. Of course, he had he was a beloved player here in Toronto. He was passionate, enthusiastic. He performed. What will you remember or appreciate most about Josh Donaldson's career when you look back?
Tremendous player. You know, he always lived for the big moment. He it got rough for him at the end. He dealt with those calf injuries all the time, but you know, those things are part of the game and he fought through them. And I just felt like, you know, he gave his all and enjoyed as much as he could when he was out there on that field. So, I think, you know what, when you hang it up, it's always a tough decision. But when you can give them the jersey and say, hey, you know what, I have enough. And that's how you can sort of ride up to the sunset.
Last one for you, Cliff. You toured the facility there in Dunedin for the Toronto Blue Jays. Are you surprised that it wasn't the difference in the Ohtani sweepstakes?
You know, I mean, it's one heck of a facility, boy. And look, if you would have gave me a shot at the title to go there and see that thing before I signed the contract, heck, I'd have been in Dunedin. I definitely would have been there. So I think it's definitely something that's going to lure, you know, key free agents at some point. I mean, the key to success, in my opinion, is health. And they did everything in their power with their money to make sure that they protect their investments. So in the long run, I think it's definitely going to pay off for them, for sure.
Yeah, we're proud of that facility. We learned a lot about that facility during the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes. That was our pride and joy. I might have to go down there and just, you know, check it out myself. Cliff, we appreciate your time. Yeah, all right. Okay, we'll get down there. Maybe we'll do the show from Dunedin one day. We appreciate your time today. It was great to catch up, and hopefully we can chat down the road.
No, I appreciate you.
Thanks so much. Cliff Floyd, MLB Network analyst, World Series champion. Spent a lot of time in the major leagues, and that was really great. It's like, and he got to go see the Florida Complex.
Mm-hmm.
That's
got
a treat
itself. With Vladdy. It's not easy to get the one-on-ones with Vladdy.
Yeah, Vladdy seemed really comfortable with
Cliff's
him.
Cliff's got it. So, the state of the Blue Jays, again, we can get back to it in terms of the headlines and the news that is emanating out of that facility. Gausman dealing with something, Manoa, you know, there was all this like, oh, Manoa, it might be the old Manoa, and then all of a sudden we've got a tough start followed by injury news. Bowden Francis, though, maybe stepping into that Manoa role, you could feel good about it. But if Kevin Gausman is, if there's setbacks in any way, all of a sudden you got an incomplete rotation, and the thing that you leaned on the most is not there for you. There's a big acquisition with Yariel Rodriguez, but he also suffered a setback and is believed to not be ready to help this team, at least in the immediate term. So all of a sudden names like Mitch White are coming out of the woodwork again, and you're feeling at least, you know, those vibes where it's like, oh, it's a new day, the sunshine, the birds chirping, it's spring training, anew, everything. Mm-hmm. It's, you're getting that feeling again in the back of your mind, at least telling you, hey, this isn't perfect. And if you cut off the head of the snake, which is Kevin Gausman, boy, are they in trouble.
Well, Vladdy's hitting 438 foot bombs. So that can be your, that can be your like
everything
birds chirping sunshine
out
of today. We'll do that every day. You can find something that evens out. That hopefully is your win today. But we just mentioned it with Cliff briefly there. But Josh Donaldson, of course, announcing his retirement, the bringer of rain, 13 seasons in MLB, a three-time All-Star, two-time Silver Slugger, and, of course, AL MVP in 2015 with 279 home runs in his career. I mean, when you think of that time, of Blue Jays baseball that I think brought the most fans in this era, that was the most exciting to watch, the most chaotic, enthusiastic. That was when Josh Donaldson was one of the faces, the pride and joy of being a Blue Jay. And so, you know, he's going to leave a really, I think, important and lasting legacy with the Blue Jays now that he is retiring. And it was nice. I saw some videos today, like his walk-off in Game 3 of the ALDS against the Rangers. Like, that just brings you back to that playoff run, right? It was so much fun.
Yeah, front and center, as you mentioned, at the most important time in Blue Jays history, at least for the both of us, which means something, right? Like the best memories we are going to have, or at least have had, involved Josh Donaldson to a certain respect. And he wasn't, you know, the most loved, and he's kind of like Bautista in that way, and that he's not the most loved. Maybe Edwin Encarnacion out of that group was the most beloved. But that's the thing about Josh Donaldson, is he is the player that you want to root for. And when he goes somewhere else, and we experience this, you want to hate him. Like, I hated him when he was the New York Yankees. Did not like him anymore when he was the New York Yankees. But when he was here and how hard he played, you couldn't help but appreciate and respect everything that he gave out there on the field. And for that reason, despite only 3+ years with the Blue Jays, it's going to be much more than that. It's like he's leaving a footprint that is twice the size of what you'd normally give in 3+ years, because he just had a profound impact on this team at the best of times.
I still see Donaldson jerseys all the time at the Rogers Center. So people that clearly cared about that stretch of baseball. And the thing I think I liked most about Donaldson was that kind of badass mentality that he had, right? He maybe wasn't the most soft-spoken, and he was a competitor through and through. Like, he did not take anything from anyone. He wanted to go out there and win baseball games, and the Blue Jays needed different personalities, and he certainly filled that bucket during that time. So
what was crazy too, because Brett Laurie was traded to get Josh Donaldson, and he was,
they kind of filled that void for each other.
Was what Brett Laurie couldn't, or we all thought Brett Laurie was going to be. All of a sudden it was here in return
was
for
nice.
Brett Laurie. It was that guy who just worked so hard, wanted it so bad, was so intense at all times. That was Josh Donaldson. It was like, that was one of the great trades for Alex Anthopoulos.
All right, before we take, a break for the rest of the night and send it off to we got SportsCenter tonight and SportsCenter 590 The Fan, and of course Monday Night Hockey, Boston and Toronto. Let's take a quick look at some best bets tonight. And UFC 299 is this weekend as well. We'll be having our guy Aaron Bronstetter on Wednesday. We'll do some picks, we'll do some previews. But for tonight's games, I've got Vegas and the Avs both on the puck line. These two teams are...
Ooh, aggressive.
That's not really that aggressive. I really think Vegas can handle the Blue Jackets, and I think the Avalanche can handle the Blackhawks, so not really the most aggressive. And I think both teams really are wanting to make a statement. They are hopefully at the top of their divisions, like trying to make a statement, so I could see them both winning at the puck line tonight.
Yeah, Vegas tailing off just a little bit gets me concerned, but not when you mention the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Right.
And the Chicago Blackhawks don't look at all interested in winning hockey games right now, so that might be the play that you just continue going to over the balance of the season. I like the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. -4.5 favorites with the LA Clippers in town. The Clippers coming off a hard-fought and impressive, I would say, victory, 89-88, I believe it was. Weird to see games under 90 points. Over the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Defense.
But traveling second half of back-to-back, Milwaukee is an absolute buzzsaw right now. They've seemed to figure things out in a very immediate way with Doc Rivers. And I just feel like it's a good spot for the Bucks to just have to win. I mean, 4.5 is still a number you got to cover, but a comfortable victory for the Bucks against the Clippers will get it done. I also like the Panthers on the money line. Great night for hockey. At Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. Maybe the four best teams in the Eastern Conference playing each other in different games here, with Boston and Toronto going at it as well. Just anytime the Panthers are near plus money or minus money, -110, whatever you want to call it, I'm rolling with them because I think they're the best team in the NHL.
I've been red hot on my goal scorer props. I've got Matthews and Zibanejad tonight as my two locked in goal scorers in the NHL. Lots of great action on tonight. If you want to cry and feel heartwarm,
I don't.
Jason Kelsey's retirement speeches today were just beautiful.
Was it?
Yeah, go on Twitter, allow yourself to feel. It was really sweet.
I feel like I've heard him retire already a couple times.
No, this is the real deal.
That's my issue with
it. It was really sweet. He talks a lot about his wife, and it was just nice. So maybe you want to feel good on Monday night.
Travis Kelsey was tearing up as well.
And that was also important. So.
Is Taylor there?
No, she's busy selling out stadiums.
She's in like South Korea or something?
Yeah, she's doing something.
Worldwide.
All right, Monday Night Hockey, Boston and Toronto. Looks like Joseph Woll will be getting the start a big game tonight. We'll be back tomorrow to preview a full week of trade deadline talk. Let's go.